All right, everyone, welcome to this 8th episode of Dialogue Not Division. We have a fantastic show for you today. Today, I wanted to just very briefly cover a conversation that happened between Ben Shapiro and Ro Khanna, a representative there. I thought it was just an excellent example of what it looks like for two people to disagree and yet have a rational conversation and talk to each other quite well. So I'm going to cover a little bit of that, just a brief bit, and then I'll move on to talk further about the minimum wage discussion. Right now, there's a lot of conversation and dialogue around $15 an hour minimum wage, federal minimum wage, I should say. And then I'm also going to move in and talk a little bit about one of the trending hashtags right now is our survival at stake. I wanted to kind of frame some of that conversation and talk a little bit about that. And then moving on, I'll wrap it up with the Dr. Seuss canceled thing that's been going around for a while. Just talk a little bit about my opinion on that, how I think some people or many people are overreacting in my opinion. But so let's go ahead and just jump right into it. So as I mentioned, Ben Shapiro had on his show a Democratic senator. His name is Ro Khanna. I believe I'm saying that right. And man, it was a great, it was just an absolutely fantastic discussion between two people that really didn't agree on anything in my mind. And it was just great to see two sides talking to each other rationally without getting heated or charged. There was even some back and forth on either side, or one side said, yeah, I acknowledge that some studies say that. So I really wanted to point that out for you today and just say how great a job I think both sides did. And I really wish that more of this happened. So moving right into that, I wanted to just play a small clip from that so people can hear what we're talking about. So here we are. Yes, it's the ever loved and hated Ben Shapiro. Whatever you think about him, I just want you to hear this, a little bit of this conversation, how it went on. And again, I'm just talking about how great it is to have two sides talking.
There are a couple of
each other.
Issues that I see in some of the stuff that you're saying here. Just on the specific level, obviously the vast majority of employees at places like Amazon are actually not making the minimum wage. The fact is that the minimum wage is only being made by something like 2.3% of all wage earners in the United States. About 50% of those wage earners are under the age of 25. And when you artificially boost the minimum wage, what you actually end up doing is making it harder for people who actually need the minimum wage jobs to get those jobs, because you have artificially created a base in the labor market from which employers are going to draw. So in other words, a $15 wage is the kind of wage that you pay to somebody who graduated from college. It's not typically the kind of wage that you pay for somebody who graduated from high school. And you see this historically with the minimum wage. When the federal minimum wage was increased, then people who went to high school had a much higher employment rate before, and then the minimum wage was increased, and then the unemployment rate among high school educated rose dramatically. It is not racially equal that way, actually. Minimum wage increases have disproportionately hit Black and brown people without college degrees, particularly. So why is raising the minimum wage overall a good idea?
So here, I just wanted to start by saying this is towards the beginning of their conversation. Ben does an excellent job here phrasing stuff with trying to talk facts or figures. He normally does a good job on this. As you'll notice, he's known for his debating this, his debating style. Here he's coming in a little hot and heavy, or not hot and heavy, I'd say, but he's definitely coming in a little charged, definitely one-sided, and that's okay to be charged here. And I just want you to hear Representative Ro's response here.
Well, but you're right. Right now, maybe it's 2.3%. I take your word for the study, but that's at $7.25. And there are 30 million or so of Americans who make between $7.25 and $15. Now, I think the studies go both ways. Some people have argued, and there's studies showing, that it increases productivity, it makes workers happier, it actually increases a business's profitability. I agree, there's studies showing that that may not be the case. One interesting study I saw is that what it really forces businesses to do is require high school as a credential. And this a fair point would be saying that this may make it difficult, more difficult for those who don't, haven't finished high school to get one of those jobs. But for 90% of Americans who have a high school degree, they will be able to get that job and pay more. So I guess the studies are in are there are studies all over the place on this. My view is that the country would be better off with a higher wage that would help productivity, help the happiness of our employees.
No, I mean, the simple.
So there you have it. I just wanted to really highlight that because I thought that was a really great exchange there. So Ben started with some facts, and what he did is he came back very very lighthearted, I should say. And this whole conversation, he stayed very lighthearted. And then he did something that you rarely see. He acknowledged that there was an argument on the other side. He said, I understand. I'm going to take your word for that specific number. I don't know it exactly, but I have seen many studies, and the studies are conflicting. And he really just acknowledged that there are two different things. He acknowledged some of his feelings. He wasn't just waiting to respond with those one-liners that you often see coming up. I just thought overall, wow, he did a fantastic job here of doing that. This whole conversation, it really turned out exactly like that. The whole thing stayed like that. Ben was a little bit, a little bit hot on that, I would say, which that's just his style. But overall, it was a fantastic conversation between two people that disagreed on nearly everything. But they did a really good job of, one, making sure they understood each other, and two, that they were responding specifically to each other's criticisms or each other's points or things that were in there. They had a great conversation, and overall, I thought it was just an excellent example of what I believe should be happening, or more of what I should be seeing happening across both aisles, people coming and talking to each other. And if you go and you look at the Khanna's Twitter, you will see that he shared this, and there was a lot of responses that were saying, great job, you know, this is how things should be. This is how we should be talking to each other, even if we disagree. This is how we should be talking to each other. So again, I thought it was a great example of what this podcast is trying to do, is to recognize that both sides are human, that they're both trying to look at their different facts coming from different points of views or different ways where what they think is best. And you can have a conversation, you can completely disagree, but still have a very civil conversation. So, man, I just thought that was such a good example. And something to be emulated. So, of course, I went on that. And with that conversation, I went on to Ro Khanna's Twitter. And unfortunately, the way he tweets doesn't exactly meet that same standard of that conversation. We'll get into that a little bit. But again, he is a politician, and that is how politicians roll. But with that, I really did want to dig just a little bit into that minimum wage discussion. For those of you that don't know, the COVID relief bill currently being seen are currently going through the House and the Senate originally contained a $15 an hour federal minimum wage. From the very beginning, this is something that I saw and said, oh boy, this is going to slow down this bill's passing. This is a bad idea. This is not going to be popular with Republicans. It's going to cause issues. There's so many things that we could agree on in this. I really wish they hadn't put this in. It's going to slow things down. And unfortunately, I've been proven right. It's been hotly debated, and it's been going in and out of the bill as it comes through. The last I saw, one side did just vote and they approved this. They're sending it back to the House, I believe it is. The bill, as it was voted on, did contain the $15 minimum wage, but there was due to some rule, basically they're trying to pass it with reconciliation, which means that it requires that it only requires the 50 votes or 50 plus Kamala Harris's votes to pass. Due to some rules, what they're saying is that that this specific proposal, the $15 minimum wage, doesn't fall into that reconciliation process, because basically what they're saying is it'll cause a significant it'll have a significant effect on the budget. And so what it needs is it needs a bigger majority to go through. So in this case, 60 representatives here. So it's been hotly contested, and you've seen a lot of things around this. So what's going to happen now with the COVID bill, from my understanding, is it's going to the other side. They're going to vote on it, but they're not going to vote on the $15 minimum wage because it didn't fit into that. There is a big movement right now trying to push for people to override that rule, or from I'm hearing a lot of conflicting things, but what I'm seeing is that Kamala could come in there as the chair. Sorry, my terminology may not be correct there, but may be able to come in there and basically override that Senate parliamentarian's decision, this unelected person's decision, that basically it doesn't fit into this reconciliation process. There's a lot of push for that. There's a lot of push to vote to ignore that decision. Basically, what I'm seeing a lot of is just the $15 minimum wage at any cost. Just keep fighting for it. Keep fighting for it. And we'll get into that as well a little bit later in this podcast. But I did want to take a moment and just kind of look at that minimum wage argument. So this is, as Representative Roe there said, there's studies on both sides of this. And that's what I really wanted to show, is that there's so much on either side here for this $15 minimum wage. It's really reasonable for somebody to come out with either opinion, in my personal opinion, I guess I should say. But really, overall, there are studies that go both ways. So the biggest starting point of this argument, of course, is many people are saying that it kind of starts with, I guess, the fair wage. It's people are saying that you should be required to pay a fair wage. You're seeing a lot of people also saying that, you know, nobody should work full time and still be in poverty, things like that. And then the main argument they're using is that the minimum wage has not kept pace with productivity increases in the United States. You'll often see charts similar to this one here. So you'll see on the chart that it comes up here, and what you see is the productivity gains in the United States are going up, 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 and minimum wage is following until it hits a certain point, and it just kind of stagnates and it goes there. So a lot of people are saying that what's happening here is the minimum wage isn't falling like it should. You'll see things like people stating that if it had followed this, the minimum wage would currently be $24 an hour. That would be the minimum wage if it had followed that. It's interesting that they use this argument instead of the minimum wage adjusted for inflation or directly in purchasing power. So it's an odd argument. But what they're saying is America's economy is becoming more and more productive, and they think that the American worker should get paid to match that, not necessarily that they should have a standard minimum wage and that should be adjusted for inflation or match purchasing power. So that's a very, I'd say, liberal way of looking at it, is that, you know, what they're arguing for is that the workers should share or have their same share of those productivity gains. I'm not going to get into that exact thing, this one, but I did want to talk specifically about that $15 minimum wage. And what a lot of people are saying is, because they say the minimum wage should be $24 to match those productivity, they're saying $15 is a compromise. This is our compromise. We've already made this compromise. This is what we need to push through. So with that, just moving on to that. So who's affected by this? In that clip, which again I highly recommend that you go and you listen to kind of both sides of that argument from the clip that I just played. I believe that one is called, just so you can look, it's Ben Shapiro and Representative Roe Conn clash over the $15 minimum wage debate. That's the title of that video on YouTube. Feel free to go look it up when you have some spare time. Highly recommended. The word clash is definitely misleading. I wouldn't say they clash. They have a nice civil discussion with points back and forth on that one. But as they mention in that video, I think he says 28 million, he also tweets out 28 million. But what I was able to find is that about 29 million people of all ages, representing a quarter of full-time year-round workforce, had annual earnings in 2018 equal to or less than $15 an hour. So that less than $15 an hour, I believe that's the tipped wage, which it wasn't quite clear how they were factoring that in, because with the federal minimum wage or tipped minimum wage, you don't just get your $2.35. If you don't make it to the minimum wage, employers do have to pay you minimum wage. According to this, there were other people, or quite a significant amount of people, that weren't even making minimum wage. It wasn't very much explained in the statistic when I was looking into it, but what they are saying here, the big takeaway I want to say is there are 28, 29 million people of all ages, not necessarily just young people, that are making less than $15 an hour. Of those in 2018, the stats I was able to find said that 434,000 are at the exact minimum wage. I think it had significantly more that were under the minimum wage. So it ended up being a little bit over a million individuals that they were saying were at 725 or under. Again, no exact explanation about why people would be under the minimum wage, other than I do believe there are some exceptions for that for farm workers and young adults. Again, as we mentioned before, what they're saying is it hasn't kept pace with the productivity, and the minimum wage has not risen since July 24th, 2009 or 2009. So here we are in 2021, and minimum wage has not been adjusted. So that's one of the main arguments saying, hey, we need to fight with this. I should say federal minimum wage has not been adjusted. One interesting study I found is this one here. I'll bring it up here. They tried to look at the effects of what a $15 minimum wage would have on kind of poverty. And what they found was that a $15 minimum wage could have averted 2,800 to 5,500 premature deaths between 2008 and 2012 in New York City alone, representing 4 to 8% of total premature deaths. So what this study is saying is they take a look at it, and they were saying there's a lot of people in poverty. There's some deaths related from those poverty. And if we had a $15 minimum wage, between 2,800 and 5,500 people might not have died. And of course, that's something that we want to avoid, and we want to fight poverty, absolutely. So that's one of the big studies I saw that was a really interesting argument directly for basically linking that minimum wage to healthcare. Again, everything I'm going to say here is hotly contested, and you can find a study that'll probably say the exact opposite. But I did want to point that out. I thought that was very interesting. As far as how many people a $15 an hour wage would pull out of poverty, that's another one that I found a lot of different numbers. I did find that the Congressional Budget Office, which is a bipartisan, not associated with either party organization, did some research. What they found was that they said that a $15 an hour minimum wage would pull about 900,000 people out of poverty. So quite a lot of people that it would pull out of poverty after they did all of their analysis. So, of course, that's a great thing. And that is something that we want with that. So that's what they found there. And then, as you heard a little bit, not a terribly strong argument, in my opinion. You did hear Representative Roe there. He argued that there are some studies that have shown that raising the minimum wage might have productivity benefits for businesses. If you went on in the clip a little bit, Ben says, so if paying people more money is going to cause a business to make more money, why wouldn't they already be doing it? Because that's what they care about. And Roe comes back to that by saying, well, I don't think all businesses are making necessarily making long-term decisions instead of short-term decisions, which there is some merit to that. A lot of times you do see a lot of businesses making, especially larger businesses, they make decisions that trying to affect their stock price in the short term, and they may or may not want to make significant investments for the future that in the short term may affect their stock price. There is an argument for that. But overall, it is one of those things where obviously if it's a clear business case that paying your employees more means you have more engaged employees and they ultimately make more money for you and your business makes more, if that was a clear cut case, you'd see many more businesses doing this. There are some businesses that have taken on this model and that buy into this. Quite a few, actually. You will see that I believe Amazon is one that pays employees over $15 an hour, or they've at least announced that they will be. I know other companies such as does Chick-fil-A pay normally, well above the minimum wage, as well as offer benefits. So many of them have bought into this model, and I think have seen success with this. So I think there's some argument there, but again, I do think that if it was clear evidence that your business is going to make money, more money, if you pay people more money, that businesses would be doing it on a wider spread scale. So those are some of the arguments for it. Again, it's quite clear, or there's a lot of studies that show that it will bring people out of poverty. There are some studies that show it may even prevent some people from having unnecessary deaths. There are some studies that are showing it may actually help. But what I also wanted to do is there's a big argument against it, of course. So if you're conservative, you're probably familiar with many of these. And again, all of these that I'm going to say are hotly contested. There's a lot of literature and a lot of studies on this and a lot of different things. So taking that same Congressional Budget Office, one that said it would bring 900,000 people out of poverty, this is what they said. So the same thing when they said that would also cost 1.5 million people to lose their job. So it comes with a clear trade-off, according to them. So they're saying, yes, it would raise some people out of poverty, and a lot. We would also lose 1.5 million jobs. That was their estimate. They actually had a whole giant range of possibilities that went all the way up to 4 million, but they believe 1.5 million was the most likely number on that one. That's a big argument against it. One of the things that I noted when I heard Joe Biden talk about the $15 minimum wage is he mentioned it in one of his speeches a while back, where he was talking about how right now a lot of Americans are unemployed, right? Right now, a lot of Americans, their hours are being reduced or cut, but people need aid. People are hurting, which is very clear with this pandemic, because people are hurting, and almost always through no fault of their own. There's been a lot that's happened from COVID in an effort to protect people. There have been shutdowns, lockdowns, different things that have had drastic effects on the economy and unemployment. And what he's saying is that, and then he said he wanted to push for the $15 minimum wage. And my first thought there is, well, one, what I already said before is, ooh, that's going to make this package, it's going to make it having a hard time pass, because that's going to be hotly contested. And two, well, if you're talking about unemployment and people's hours getting cut, there is a lot of research that shows increasing the minimum wage may actually cause unemployment to rise and cause people to cut hours. So one of the studies I did find on that as well is this one here. This one was by the University of Illinois. It was like a Dr. Chen that did this study here. They looked at the minimum wage, or all the different states that had raised their minimum wage. And then they also looked at production. This was more focusing on production. And what they found was results that clearly imply that the hourly wage of production workers when it was increased by 10%, so in this case they put 90 cents in an average establishment, on average the establishment reduced the total hours worked by the production workforce by 7.2% and increased capital expenditures on machines and equipment by 24.3%. So this study, this quite large study, I believe this was a little bit older. I think it was in. Actually, I think it's several years old. But what they found is a quite clear indication that when you raise that wage, that minimum wage, what happened a lot of times is they reduced hours, and instead they decided to invest in machinery. Again, this is a little bit more on the production side, but it makes sense. And this is kind of one of the common logics you'll hear conservatives say is, if you raise it, well, they're just going to hire a machine, because the people that make minimum wage are normally low skilled workers. They don't have a lot of skills that are in high demand, and that's why they're not making more money. And what that is it means that they can more easily be automated out of a job. Many people use an example of this is, you know, those self-checkout machines that are at most Walmarts now, at many grocery stores would be an example. You're starting to see McDonald's have some kiosks, some of those things. So there is some studies that quite clearly show that. Another study that I found as well took a look. This one is by the, I forget, it's on this image here. It's by Joseph Subia and Richard Bockhauser here. This one is from 2010, so it's a little bit older. But what they did is they looked at the different states that had raised the minimum wage above federal wages, and then they took those states and tried to see the actual rate of, or the effect on poverty in the state. And what they show is that the recent minimum wage increases between 2003 and 2007, again, it's a little bit older, had no effect on state poverty rates. And they had a lot of reasons why they said that was. And then they went on to say that there was another one being proposed that also had it was very unlikely to have any significant effect. So really, even that, the fact that it would have a drastic effect on poverty is also hotly contested. That study said, from all the evidence they could find, is it was a great way to I don't remember the exact word they said, so I'm going to paraphrase this probably a little bit more strongly than they put it. But basically said it's a great way to signal that you were trying to do something, but it wasn't actually doing anything. And they said that they believed that there were other ways that you could more effectively target poverty. So that's one of them. Another thing is there's quite a few studies. There's a growing body of studies, I should say, that do show a direct causal link between raising the minimum wage and increases in prices. There are quite a few studies done with the fast food industries that showed as those raised, it also caused the food prices to go up. So the argument there as well is that when you raise minimum wage, all that really does is put those costs back onto the consumer. So it's just going to cause what they'd say is inflation or increased prices. I will say with that, the amount of that that's put on the back onto the customer is hotly contested. There's a lot of people that say it's really not that much. There are some that show it's more than others. So overall, but it's definitely there and something that should be taken into account. So with that said, what I'm really trying to say here is that there are vast bodies of research on both sides of this, ones that show that the traditional conservative thought of if you try to artificially inflate the rates, you're also going to come with inflation. It's going to result in a lot of people losing their jobs. There is studies that show that. And there are also some studies that show that perhaps raising the rates would have a positive effect. I did find one article where a bunch of people or some economics individuals, they took a look at basically all the body of works and they tried to analyze it and see the different effects and basically average out what they thought. And what they said is that all of the body of evidence showed that it would be more positive than negative. It's very hard from the article I saw to actually get into their methodology or buy into that because there's so many different studies all saying different things. Most of these are just surveys, estimates, guesses, models with a lot of assumptions built into them. But I will say there's a good case on both ends. So really what it comes down to is reasonable people from both sides can take both positions. What I will say is from my personal experience, I have seen exactly the negatives happen. One of the clear things in research as well is that when you raise the minimum wage, especially drastically, it as Ben said, it affects a lot of the younger individuals. A lot of researchers show that. You'll see other fact checkers say, well, it's not only, or it's, you know, I think they said for the $15 minimum wage, the average age of person that it would affect would be 30s. So it's a lot of younger individuals, but not college age or the young people just getting skills. But when it comes to that 725 number, that is where a good portion of that are younger workers. What I can say is I worked in a state that raised the minimum wage, Washington. Incrementally, they've been raising it to $15 an hour. And we hired student workers at this part-time student workers. As this is kicking in, as it was kicking in, we absolutely cut hours because our budget was the same. And we didn't get more budget just because the state decided to raise the hours. What we ended up doing is just doing without, especially as it's getting higher, it became harder and harder to justify having a couple students instead of just having one full-time worker. Now, you might think that's a good thing because we're hiring a full-time worker. I will say we were replacing, when you're replacing four or five students, when you talk about the student debt, we were, in this case, we were not paying minimum wage, but we were not paying $15 an hour. These were student workers with very little skills. They were using these skills to get experience. And when they graduated, I had a worker that went and worked for Amazon. I had a worker that went and made very good money at other places. We were definitely equipping them and giving them skills that were matched with their degree that was making them more marketable on the outside. I will say that. And I think they would admit that. It was a very good thing for the student workers. We did cut back on hours and we did drop a couple of them, just my area. So I will say that I definitely buy into that argument because I've seen it firsthand that it will definitely affect the younger college age students. When you start doing that, you know, we do look at is that person worth $15 an hour? And the answer a lot of times was no, because these were low skilled workers. These were workers that I had to spend a significant amount of time training, a very long time training. They were often they would stay, some of them, the good ones would stay for quite a long time. Other people would just leave. They weren't always the most reliable workers either. And so when it comes to paying them $15 an hour, the vast majority of them, they weren't providing that type of value to the organization. So that was one thing that I've seen. Now, of course, you'll hear a lot of the argument saying that that if an organization can't afford $15 or a living wage, then they shouldn't exist. I don't buy into that. I would encourage people to think that through a little bit. Not every job is meant to be a living wage. Now, maybe you could say that nobody should work 40 hours and not be able to live. That's a little bit more fair statement. But not every job is made to offer a living wage. Many jobs are supplemental jobs. They're small part-time jobs. They're filler jobs. They're extra jobs. And we do want those jobs. We want jobs where if you need a little extra money to pay off credit card debt, you go out and you get another one that's more flexible. Those lower-paying jobs, normally, not always, I would say normally from my experience, they offer a lot more flexibility. So you can go and they have to work around your other job. So I would say not all jobs are designed as one for an adult to raise a family on. Many of these are for student workers to get those experience so they can make those more money later on. So again, I just wanted to share my experience. That's directly what I have seen are hour reductions from that, as well as laying off younger workers or choosing not to keep them. So I definitely have seen that. I definitely buy into that a little bit more. Again, I will acknowledge that the research, I will acknowledge just like Ro did, that the research is, it's quite clearly split. And there are some theories where perhaps we could kind of straddle or take the best of both worlds. One of the proposals I've seen, I'm not a super big fan of because I'm not a big fan of government subsidies overall, but that's a different story. But one of the proposals was to keep that minimum wage there, but to still offer incentives, as actually Ro mentioned, incentives for smaller businesses that kind of help them to pay those employees more. One of the big arguments or one of the things that you see a lot is we're kind of already doing that. There was a big thing a while back where they were talking about or where they did research and they found that Walmart and other low-paid employees were a huge portion of them were on other benefits from the state or federal government or local governments, I should say. So they were disproportionately. What they were arguing was the government was already subsidizing them because Walmart wasn't paying them enough. So that's an interesting argument and one that definitely should be looked into. So overall, I hope you enjoyed that really brief look into the both sides of that. I would encourage each of you, if you're very interested in, to really dig into the research on both sides. Don't just go read the one article from your side, because again, there is a quite large body of research. There's a body of research supporting both sides. There are economists. Yes. Anyway, there are ones on both sides of this. So moving right along, I did want to talk a little bit about that trending, one of the trending hashtags on Twitter there. And what you see are things like this. So again, I mentioned, I love that Ben versus Roe conversation there. And then you get into his tweet history and you see things like this. Now, this on its face may not seem bad to many of you, but it says 76% of Americans support the COVID relief bill, including 60% of Republicans. Why then did every single House Republican vote against it? And he had quite a few other tweets as well as his constituents in replies that were basically saying, well, it's because Republicans only care about such and such. If you look at the statistics he posted himself, it goes in, it breaks things down by whether people strongly support, somewhat support, are neutral, don't support, or strongly disagree with the support. And here he mentions that 60% of Republicans are on board with that. What I thought was interesting is I felt like that was he took those ones that somewhat support the COVID relief bill and he lumped them in with they support. And the reason why I think that's important, yes, you can kind of say that they somewhat support it, but they're not fully supporting it. And that goes exactly to what I said before, is many of them, as it was voted on before, the one he's talking about, it did include the $15 an hour minimum wage, which again is very divisive along those party lines. It included a lot of state and local funding. And what you've seen here is this bill has become very much, Republican versus Democrat. And it's rose to one of the trending tweets of our survival at stake. Basically, what it's saying is you're fighting over this and can't get it passed. Our survival's at stake. Get it done. And there's a lot of merit to this tweet. You see this. There are lots of people that are terribly affected by COVID-19, by a lot of these government policies, again, through no fault of their own. And yet we're unable to pass this. And what I don't like are people similar to that one that are ignoring what I consider the actual issue and trying to make the other side look bad. And so here he's saying, I can't believe Republicans don't want this bill, or why aren't they? Because this is a widely popular bill. I can't believe such and such. And what this does is it's feeding into this big base of people that are saying, like, well, Republicans are evil because they don't care if people are dying. They don't care about this. And my biggest problem with this is they knew this was going to happen. Even Joe Biden even said that he wasn't sure if the $15 an hour minimum wage would make it in there. Everybody knew, including me, from the moment I heard it, that was going to be a divisive issue. And what they did is, instead of focusing on what the somewhat supports in this case, or instead of focusing on the bringing those up to so more people support it, they really put together this bill, in my mind, that was opportunistic. Now, I understand they truly believe that a $15 an hour minimum wage is necessary. And if that's true, that's fine. But what they did is they bundled something they knew was very, very divided. Very divided. And they lumped it into this. And what they should have done, in my mind, is you take what everyone agrees on. Most people agree on the direct payments. Now, there are some people on the conservative side or the Republican side that are questioning whether or not they think the direct payments are done. But if you take just the direct payments, if you take the vaccine funding, if you take some of the school funding, I think you'd find a lot of Republicans that would do that. Instead, what they did is they're trying to bundle everything into this and get their wish list, get their $15 an hour minimum wage. They're trying to get their state bailouts, and they're lumping all of this stuff in there that, in my mind, they may think is necessary, but they know it's causing delays. And what they're doing is they're using that is to try to make the other side look bad, where the other side is the one of supposed fiscal conservatives. The last administration definitely didn't help the deficit, we'll put it that way. But they are the ones that are supposed to be arguing for to be fiscally conservative. They are ones that are trying to not go into government waste, and you throw this huge bill with a large portion of it having nothing to do with COVID. And that's one of the big arguments on the other side, is they're saying very little of this money is actually going directly to the people that need it. Almost all of them seem to agree that on some form of direct payments, there's from what I've seen, there's quite a large consensus on wanting to on extending some of the other things, evictions, things like that, and some of the other payments are exempting some of the payments. The core is very popular. I don't understand. I do understand. People are using this politically, but if you want it to pass, go ahead and find the things that people can agree on and put it in there. Instead, what they're doing is they're taking this and making it a divisive issue and then trying to use it to make one side look bad. And I think it may be smart politics, but you're playing politics with people's lives. So I think that our survival's at stake is a good hashtag. However, I think many of the users of it, I don't agree with, because they're using it as against the GOP or against this side, because how dare you, you're against this. And it's like, no, they're not against that part. They're against many parts of this bills. Why do we always have to try to bundle everything in or throw things in? Or in this case, they've ruled that the $15 an hour minimum wage can't go through the normal budget reconciliation process. It needs to actually be voted on by more. And what they're trying to do is trying to figure out all these ways and delay it and find ways to go past that or subvert that rule or do it anyway and just delaying things. So at this case, I think it's time to focus on the common ground of what we can do instead of trying to get $15 minimum wage at any cost. I have no problem with what Biden said. Is basically what he said is, this was quite a while ago, is he said he wasn't sure if $15 an hour minimum wage would make it. He said, or even make it into his proposal. He said it likely wouldn't survive, which it's looking like it probably won't. But he said he's committed to trying to find ways to make it through regular legislative sessions. And I'm all for that. If that's what you think the American people are for, Roe also tweets how popular that is at 62%, according to him, which to me, that's not vastly popular. And that's specifically for the $15 minimum wage. If it's that popular, go for it and put it in its own package instead of slowing down all of the other aid that's needed. Because again, especially because there's a good argument that putting through a $15 minimum wage, even extended over a little time, is going to cost people jobs. And you're talking about all the hours being reduced because of COVID, because business can't afford it. It's likely going to add more hour reductions for some people. Now, it might have a large positive effect as well. We already discussed about that. But overall, that our survival at stake is an interesting one, because it really just focuses, or it really shows how people are, both sides are, primarily in this case, the liberals, the Republicans or conservatives do it quite often differently. But it shows how they're really trying to take advantage of this, in my opinion, to try to lump something through that they know won't go through otherwise, or likely wouldn't go through otherwise. And they're trying to take this crisis and use it as a way to get some other policies through that they know aren't as supported. And I think that's what's wrong with politics, in my mind. So that's my thoughts on the Our Survival at Stake hashtag. The only other thing I wanted to talk about was the big ones that I'm seeing here. Complaining people, primarily conservatives, about the so-called cancellation of Dr. Seuss. So for those of you that don't know, one of the organizations released a study. They said that there's a lot of racist imagery in Dr. Seuss's books. They no longer added it to one of the reading lists. The publisher announced that they wouldn't be publishing, I believe it's 6 books of Dr. Seuss. And because of this, and if you go on Amazon, I guess you can't order these 6 books. And so, of course, as nearly always happens, there's a big outcry of cancel culture. How could they cancel this? They're canceling Dr. Seuss now. Now, Dr. Seuss is very beloved to many people, the books. Many people read it as a kid, me included. And so, of course, I looked into it. And what it boils down to, you see a lot of the conservatives really digging into this, saying it was canceled for absurd reasons. So if you look into the reasons why, there are images in these six books primarily that have that further harmful stereotypes. So one of them was, I believe, that there was a Jewish person that was supposed to be tight with money, or is money in a Jewish person. There was another one where it was a Japanese person with yellow skin. And I guess in the caption of the picture, it called him a Japanese. There was a few other ones. There was some stereotypical stereotypical and negative portrayal of black people in the book. They also found that 98% of the characters in his book were white. So what I did find is there's several instances where the images definitely were feeding into some stereotypes. And so what they did is they released that, said that Dr. Seuss, they found this kind of racism. The publisher on the path said, okay, we're going to not publish this, which to me, that's not the same thing necessarily as being canceled, no longer recommending it on a list. And then a publisher saying that, well, we're no longer going to publish these six books. I think anyone calling for, oh, they're canceling and coming after Dr. Seuss, I think they're being a little extreme. Now, there are some organizations that are trying to remove Dr. Seuss from certain areas, or I forget, it was like a ride and another one's removing him from like some kind of recognition. But overall, what I'm saying is I think it's time to tone down on a little bit of that rhetoric around the cancellation rhetoric. And many of us get a little bit too caught up into it. In this case, there were definitely some stereotypes that were in these six books. If you look at these six books, they really weren't, at least to me, they weren't widely known. They're none of the super famous ones, at least the ones I've heard of. Even the many of the conservative people that I watch or listen to, they said, yeah, I never even heard of these, but I'm outraged. So overall, it was, I'd say, calm down a little bit on that rhetoric, in my opinion. Definitely some, and I think we can all agree, and I think that Dr. Seuss would have agreed, that negative stereotypes about people are something that we should seek to avoid. I'm not necessarily all for canceling things over that. I think oftentimes they are a good conversation point with your children. For instance, some people are talking about Disney. Some of their shows, they put warnings before it. You know, when we watched one of those with my kids, I was like, hey, let's see if we can spot the cultural insensitive spot so we can talk about it. And in the one particular movie, though, it was a quite unique one. But sometimes I think we are trying a little too hard not to offend people. We'll put it that way. But often in the Disney ones, they're quite egregious, and it's definitely something worth having a conversation for. But when you start talking about this being a book burning, to my knowledge, nobody's coming to anybody's house and trying to collect these books and burn these books. All it is a publisher saying, we're not going to publish anymore. And I believe Amazon pulled them. So that's what I have to say about that one. And that's really the show for today. It was a quite interesting week, and those were the main items that kind of struck me. Many other things were happening. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of those. If there's any major arguments I missed for the minimum wage, feel free to post them either in the comments or send them to me. Happy to include them in a future episode or have another discussion. Overall, just have a great week, and I will see you then.